Welcome, guys, to Behind the Shield. My name's James Gearing, and this is episode 33. And this week, we're talking about leadership. We touched on this subject before with Jared Sergi from Trial by Fire, which was a phenomenal interview. But Jared's perspective was from within the fire service. My guests this week are Rob Nielsen, who's CEO and founder of All American Leadership, and Rick Rochelle, who now works for them as well, as well as the National Outdoor Leadership School. So Rob came through the military route, West Point grad, helicopter pilot, and Rick came through the wilderness exploration and rescue route. So they have very unique perspectives. And then the men and women that they work with, and there's many of them, all are from a gamut of careers, from special forces all the way through to civilian, are also, you know, part of this incredible network of leadership. So they've been working with several of the departments out on the West Coast, I believe, Orange County, San Diego, Los Angeles. And we discuss how they initially entered the first responder realm, the feedback that they got, the effects that they've had through this department, and then what they are trying to do to help other departments. I would love to bring them over to Florida and do a workshop with us and the surrounding departments. And I think the leadership is really an area that no matter where you are, no matter where your company, business, department is, if you can create leadership and ownership within your department at all ranks, you're only going to create a better service and a better working environment. So this is something that while I focus on the wellness side, if the leadership side is intact as well, that's only going to add to that overall effect of a great fire department. So that being said, I want to urge you as well to rate us on iTunes. The more ratings that we get, the more visible we are. And then, as I say before, share us on social media, share your favorite episode. I really want to just get these incredible minds out around the globe. We are growing, by the week. But if every person shares to two people, then this is going to grow exponentially, and the wisdom that we have on these 33 episodes are going to reach people who I believe their lives are going to be changed by. So without further ado, I introduce to you Rob Nielsen and Rick Rochelle. Enjoy. So welcome to the show, guys. How are you doing?
Great.
Doing well today. Thank you.
Excellent. And where are we finding you on the planet?
We are currently on the 11th floor of the Hotel Irvine in beautiful downtown Irvine,
California. Oh, fantastic. I actually used to do my MMA kickboxing training there in Irvine with Coach Colin Oyama, so I know it well. Okay, so I want to start by painting a picture. So We had an interesting introduction. I had Pat McNamara on the show, and his friend Mike reached out to him, and then he's obviously one of your faculty in your organization. You guys obviously came to the show, and here we are. So I would love for you to tell the listeners and also myself as well a little bit about yourselves before we delve into the whole theme for this interview. So we'll start with you, Rob. What was your, where were you born? What was your upbringing like? And how did you make that transition into the military?
Oh, well, thanks. So actually, I was born in Canada and migrated to the States when I was about 1 year old. Ended up living here in Southern California. My father was a janitor, and my mom did whatever odd job she could with an eighth grade education. They just both had an incredible work ethic that I saw from an early age. And then my father passed away when I was 9, and my mother just kind of doubled her grit and resilience, and eventually ended up going to West Point primarily on athletics, played water polo in high school, and that was really the ticket for me to get into West Point. And after graduation, served for about 6.5 years, went to flight school, was an Aero Scout, an attack pilot, and that was my military service. Afterwards, ended up taking a lot of the skills that I learned for leadership and applied them in the sales realm, and basically spent the next 30 years in sales leadership in various industries until about 2008, when I had left a company, started doing some consulting work, and was approached by one of my West Point classmates who said, "Rob, it's about time for me to start thinking about retiring, and I'm concerned about my ability to get a job as a 40-year infantry or a 30-year infantry officer." And I said, "Wow, well, let's do a quick skills assessment here before you judge yourself too harshly." And said, "You know, you've got 3 master's degrees, a PhD, and you're a professor at arguably one of the oldest institutions of leadership development in the world, being West Point, and maybe there's an opportunity for us to help other companies out there." And that was really where the seed was planted for what today is All American Leadership. And so that kind of brings us to where we are now. So I'll hand it over to Rick.
Okay. So Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, you weren't in the military, but you ended up in Princeton and then with the organization NOLS. So I'd love to hear the journey from your birth through to that point.
You bet. All the way back to birth. I was born in Ohio, grew up there, and we ask our firefighters who was influential in their lives and to get them thinking about themselves and where they're headed with their leadership. And so I grew up kind of a geeky kid. I had a 6th grade teacher who convinced me that the Greek ideal of a scholar athlete was what I ought to be. And then I had a 7th grade wrestling coach who said, "If you work hard, this is a sport you can be good in." And I ended up following that passion all the way through college. And I like to joke that I majored in wrestling and minored in civil engineering. And but it was the most important part of my life for a good 7 years out of the 11 that I wrestled. I took a year off in college, and I took a course from Knowles, formerly known as the National Outdoor Leadership School. And I can tell you more about that school later, but it's very interesting. So I took this 3-month-long course, and during that, I learned that being a scholar athlete isn't going to get you to the top of a mountain. You need to worry about and think about and be proficient at emotional intelligence, managing groups, being a good leader, group dynamics, that sort of thing. So that's where that passion started. I went back and finished engineering school and thought I would just come to Knowles for a couple of years. Well, that was 30 years ago. They just kept offering me interesting opportunities. My wife Shannon and I lived in East Africa for a year, worked in the Himalayas and Patagonia and Antarctica and so on. And sometime towards the latter third of that, I started doing administrative work for Knowles, and that included supervising the mountaineering program in Alaska. I was assistant director up there, and for more than 7 years, I was the director of Knowles Professional Training. And Knowles Professional Training has now been reorganized into Knowles Custom Education and Knowles Risk Management Services. But Knowles Custom Education works with a wide variety of clients, as opposed to most of the school is open enrollment for any individual who wants to come learn about leadership or expedition skills. But the clients we worked with there were fascinating. We've run 38 expeditions for NASA astronauts. We do things for 8 of the top 20 business schools, and quite a bit with wildland firefighters. And so that's where I started to cross paths with the firefighting world. I'd also been an EMT for 26 years. I never really rode ambulance except to practice, but had some interesting situations in the backcountry, and it served me well to keep that certification current. I'm not current right now, but I was until 4 years ago. So that's where I was a couple of years ago, and a mutual friend of Bob and mine, a Navy SEAL captain who's retired named Bob Schultz, introduced us. And I was looking for a change. I'd reached the top of a learning curve, and that's when we got started working together. And so when Rob had an opportunity to work with urban firefighters, and he knew of my background with wildland firefighters, that's when we started working together on this project.
Yeah, it seems a natural progression and something that's surprisingly probably hasn't happened a lot sooner, because you have this, you know, this hierarchy infrastructure that totally mirrors an organization like the military, yet it seems to be a standalone kind of figure out as you go along philosophy with a lot of departments. And I can say a lot of departments because I've worked for four. So So I want to touch back just for a moment. You both have a couple of common denominators that I want to kind of underline. So both of you were well involved with sport. I know wrestling specifically is something that I hear a lot of very successful people went through the wrestling program. I know people like Tim Ferriss, for example, was a wrestler, and I think he got a lot of his work ethic from there. And then, Rob, you were a boxer as well, is that right?
I was a boxer at West Point. In fact, that's one of the common denominators with Mike Lorario and myself. We were on the boxing team together at West Point, and my senior year, his junior year, we were undefeated, and I was a light heavyweight, and he was something lighter than that, and we were both undefeated my senior year and his junior year.
Very nice. Now, how do you think, both of you guys, how do you think that being brought up with sport as part of your upbringing, not, you know, obsessively only doing that one thing, but how do you think that played into becoming the people that you are today?
Wow, I'll go first. Without a question, the things that sport has brought to my life includes everything from a sense of discipline and commitment, probably more than anything, that resilience and grit, that no matter how many times you get knocked down, you just get up and you just keep marching forward.
And my answer is really similar. I would say self-discipline. Like boxing, wrestling is an individual combat sport. You're either out there winning or getting beat up. Or as we like to say, you're either winning or learning. and self-reliance as well. What's interesting about that, though, is I did that for more than a decade. And towards the end of it is when I took this Knowles course and realized, wait a minute, teamwork, which was not an aspect of wrestling. I did play football in high school, but we were a mediocre team and I was the smallest lineman in the league. So, but I think, teamwork is such a critical aspect of most endeavors in life, whether it's firefighting or expeditions or the military. And so I needed to learn that sort of towards the tail end of my wrestling career.
Something I would add to that, and I think that it's something it's a common denominator on our entire team, and I think that anybody who's ever played competitive sports, particularly as a youth, is that desire, that yearning to find and accept a challenge.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, setting yourself goals and not shying away from them or having the courage to face them, I guess.
Exactly.
What is, if you want to pursue a kind of education within the military structure, what kind of journey are you taking on, and where are they trying to lead you as far as the philosophy of leadership within the military itself?
Okay. Well, the military, they love to have well-rounded leaders. And so particularly as an officer, regardless of the branch, Army, Navy, Air Force, that you will end up doing a lot of different jobs. And some of them will be commanding, where you're directly leading, and then some of them will be staff jobs. So they want folks that are going to be proficient both as leaders of men and women of character, but also that are going to have some proficiency and some understanding of logistics and some understanding of the administrative side of the military and some understanding of the operations side, the intelligence side. And so you will constantly be getting bounced around through your career so that you're to put it one way, punch tickets so that you have that well-rounded perspective. Then the other side of it is developing as a leader and the leadership philosophy. And that's something that we've found, particularly as we're working with the fire service, is the fire service has not fully transitioned to the modern world. And what I mean by that is, when I was in the military, when I was in the Army, we operated under the old traditional command and control philosophy. And as the world has changed, as it's become more volatile, more uncertain, more complex, and it has just accelerated, and where people are just more and more distracted by so many different media things, the way we lead has got to be different. And where there's so many more decisions have to be made because there's so many more things that can impact your life on a day-to-day basis, having one person making all the decisions and making all the judgment calls ends up being kind of like an hourglass. And every one of those grains of sand is another decision that has to be made and another piece of something that has to be focused on and paid attention to. And if you've only got one person or a couple of people responsible for making the decisions, you become the crimp in the hourglass. And so the military, about a decade ago, particularly just given the volatility and the changing format of warfare in the Middle East, said, this isn't working for us. And moved away from command and control to something that they call mission command. And I think in the fire service where I have run across it, it's more considered a mission-driven culture where responsibility for making decisions is pushed down to the lowest possible level and more people are given the authority to make decisions. And as long as you've got a situation where the commander's intent and the global mission is clearly communicated, you've got minimal guardrails as far as processes and procedures that have to be followed, and maximum flexibility and adaptability given to junior leaders to go out and execute on the mission. So it's much more focused on give me the objective, but don't prescribe the methods and how I get the job done. And there's a great book out by General Stan McChrystal about how he was able to lead the Joint Special Operations Command in Iraq, where he was in command of the Navy SEALs, the Delta Force, the Army Rangers, CIA analysts, Army intelligence, Air Force drone operators, and trying to combat Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And what he ended up finding was having the senior leaders make all the decisions was slow, it was cumbersome, and it was inefficient. And they were able to go from something like 3 special operations missions a month to a place where they were doing 10 to 15 of them a night, where they didn't have to rely on him to make all the decisions, give all the approvals. And what they found was things were much more effective and much more efficient when he was able to trust that his junior leaders understood the mission, were committed to the purpose, and could then go out and use their best judgment with minimal guidance, minimum guardrails to go out and do an amazing job.
And what was the name of the book?
Team of Teams.
Team of Teams. I'll put that on the show notes. Team of Teams. Brilliant. I'm pretty sure Jocko Willink's Extreme Ownership, I think they talk a lot about the changing from command and control to mission command.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does.
Okay, so yeah, so I can attest right now, the areas in the fire service where I've seen the most success, they absolutely trust their leaders all the way down the ladder. And the ones where I've seen the worst leadership so far are the ones where they're micromanaging from the top and, you know, there's no trust at all at the bottom and the guys are almost paralyzed through rules and discipline to do their job in the first place. So,
right.
All right. So let's talk about your entry into the fire service. So, what were the glaring things that you've seen with the few departments that, you know, when you first started entering into the fire service?
Well, it's a great question, James. It's been interesting, as we came into working with firefighters, we do a lot of, discovery, we call it, inquiry into what the issues are in a given organization or industry. And in this case, there are several that come up over and over, no matter what city we're in, what department we're working with. And key ones include succession. And that inevitably leads to a discussion about generational issues, because the folks who are thinking about succession, the fire chiefs and the battalion chiefs, are leading millennials. And And it's interesting because I think millennials sometimes get a bad rap of always wanting to know why. And I flip that and say, yes, they're purpose driven. And if you can clarify your purpose in an organization and get folks like that on board, you're not going to have anybody who works harder. Another issue that's very common is the blue shirt, black shirt issue. We've heard it called a whole bunch of different things, whether it's silver badge, gold badge, union, non-union. There are all these divides that overlap roughly. Probably the most colorful one has been the people who do the work and the effing admin. So those issues come up, and what you mentioned, trust, and trust is a huge issue. And we spend quite a bit of time talking about what are the elements of trust and how do you build trust.
Okay. So I want to touch on actually one thing you said before, which is the why. One thing I realized a while ago, and listening to a whole bunch of people talking about leadership, was just that. I preach it as a coach in my gym. Why are you walking through a door? What is it you want to achieve? I hold myself to that too, in my career. What is it that I want? But it's something I realized that I don't know if some, let's just say some departments even know their why. And that to me seems like a glaring problem as well. We don't have a mission statement. You just show up, you put your gear on the rig, you're going to mitigate whatever disaster comes your way that day. But, are you trying to become a better trained department? Are you trying to become, ISO class one or whatever it is? But is that something that you're seeing as well? Not a lack of direction, but a lack of vision and from the upper echelon, and then that also filtering down and being explained to the guys on the floor?
Yeah, that's such a great question, James. We have yet to find a department that does not have a mission statement or that does not have core values that have been documented. Conversely, we have not found a department where we can spontaneously ask anybody in the department what that mission is or what the values are. Even if they were in the room when they were authored, nobody can tell us what the mission is or what the values are. And that's a huge problem, particularly if you're trying to transition to that mission-driven culture or mission command type of environment, because the empowerment is in the knowing of the purpose and being committed to it and the knowing of the values, so that no matter what ends up coming down your path, as long as you know that whatever decision you make reflects positively against your core values, that then you're going to win. And one of the things that we teach and we more preach within the work that we're doing with the fire service is you got to know what your values are. You've got to be looking for them every day. You've got to be talking about them, and then ultimately you've got to be celebrating those people that are most effectively living the values. And we call it, and this goes back to our SEAL brothers, your ethos, the act of living your values. And so that you're constantly, when you're sitting around the dining table, we should be talking about our values and who did we catch living the values this week when they were out on a call. Or more importantly, because one of the other challenges we found is that there's really not a lot of leadership problems when you're out on calls. When people are on calls, they got their game face on and they're doing what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. It's when we're in the firehouse that we're not always doing what we're supposed to do. And so that living those values and talking about them helps reinforce the fact that, hey, just because Joe walked out of the room doesn't mean we start talking trash about him. That's just not part of the brotherhood or the sisterhood. Or when you're sitting down and you're watching TV, maybe before you start watching a movie or watching the basketball game, why don't we watch a TED Talk? Let's watch a Simon Sinek Start With Why or Why Leaders Eat Last video, and then talk about it for just 5 minutes. It's not where we have to live like church boys, but let's live what it is that we believe in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I find, you know, I've seen Simon Sinek's TED Talk, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. If you don't understand why you're showing up, you know, whether it's at the firefighter level or the chief level, then you're going to just be, you know, spinning your wheels and not really knowing which direction you're pushing in. And I think it does make it very confusing down the ranks. But conversely, I think in order for that mission command structure to work, you as a firefighter and the ranks lower down have to also demonstrate that you are training and that you are able to, I'm clutching for my words now. You're able to do whatever task you are given competently, because obviously mm-hmm. it is a trust thing.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so that's something I preach a lot, is training. And I think that's it. If we want to complain about how our organization is run, then we have to first walk the walk and show these people further up the chain that if you just, you know, let go of that leash, we'll be able to do our jobs like big boys and everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. And right, the trust is broader than just competence as well, though, improving your competence. It also goes to caring. In order to feel trusted by someone, you have to show that you care for them. And I was surprised coming into this organization as one of just a two or three non-military folks that we freely use the word love. And I say they because I mean those military guys that I'm working with. it's such an honor to be working with this team. But Rob and I co-teach, co-facilitate regularly, and the word love comes up. I mean, caring is important as a part of trust. And Navy SEALs are kind of surprised when business people say you don't use the word love. It's like, how can I send my sailors into harm's way if I don't love them?
If they don't know that I love them,
right?
How can I go and risk my life? Yeah.
Well, it's the same, like you said, with the brotherhood. I mean, that's exactly what you're doing to the men and women you work with is you love them and you want to make sure that they go home to their families the next day. And you love the community that you serve as well, which is why you put your life online in the first place.
Right. So we like the model that you want to show a lot of caring or love and you want high standards.
Right.
Yes. Sometimes people think that those are mutually exclusive, that you're just out to try and win a popularity contest and have your people like you. And it couldn't be any further from the truth. What we've recognized is what high performing, and we spend a lot of time studying what is it that high performing entities, whether it's special military units, whether it's championship sports teams, whether it's in the science or the arts, or the most successful businesses, what are those things that they do that make them elite? And you know, I think that literature, media, and society in general just are kind of mystified by those elite performers and think that they have something special that the rest of us can't attain. And I think that that's just such a disservice. But you can't have high expectations and you can't challenge people to perform at elite levels until or unless they feel that you genuinely care about their well-being and their success. You can do it, but if they don't think that you care about them, the best you're going to ever get is the minimum level of compliance and not 10 cents more worth of effort.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So that brings me well to another question then. So let's kind of start with the blank canvas. We'll definitely talk about all the programs that you guys do in a moment, but just from an isolated standpoint. So if you could build a good leader, let's say in the fire service, you know, what components would they need and what kind of environment would nurture a good leader?
I would say the most important aspect is self-awareness. And an understanding of what it takes to lead oneself. We break up our curriculum, and really we use the Socratic method, a lot of discussion more than just preaching. But we break that up into four parts, and they are leading self, leading in relationships, leading in teams, and leading in organizations. And we very purposefully picked the word in because we want it to be more participatory and less hierarchical. But the self-awareness part, knowing your core values, knowing how to live in alignment with those core values, knowing what triggers you emotionally. Yeah, I've heard some of your podcasts, folks talking about post-traumatic issues, which of course is a big deal in the military. It's a big deal in the outdoor leadership realm as well. And I know it is in the first responder realm. Knowing what your triggers are, and we use the word triggers in the sense of Marshall Goldsmith or Daniel Goleman, who talk about just a trigger. You can get triggered from traffic. It gets you amped up. It's not just, you know, some of the hard scenes that a firefighter might see medically or things like that. It's not just that. It's a lesser trigger of, wow, I'm a little bit amped up right now. Maybe right now is not the time to have that difficult conversation with my colleague or my someone who reports to me.
Yeah, there's another piece too that I'll piggyback on with regard to that leading self, and it comes from one of our teammates, kind of a newer teammate officially, but he's really been on board for the last several years, and he's a guy named Kevin Basic, a retired Air Force colonel, and he just left as the Air Force representative to the Secretary of Defense for ethics and professional behavior. And the way he puts it, I think, is really simple, which is a really core tenet of ours, simplicity. It's knowing what you stand for, what you stand from, and who you stand with.
Very good. Yeah, that's pretty simple and to the point.
So you start with this leading self concept, but then you need to move into other aspects of emotional intelligence, how to interact with other folks. And then leading in teams, we focus on trust and the elements of trust. And I mentioned competence and caring, but character is part of that as well.
Right. Yeah, I think that's that ties in very well with some things I've discussed with guests in the past as well. I think, as you mentioned, pre-electronics, pre-social media, pre-a lot of distractions that we have, it seems like the old-timers, I guess we refer them to, all their conversations were around the dinner table. They did seem to train a lot more. There was a lot more cohesion, a lot more of that tribal mentality. And I've seen in the very short 13 years that I've been a firefighter, how those distractions and even the way they're building fire stations now, where they put individual dorms, which from a sleep deprivation perspective are phenomenal. They're fantastic. But from a social perspective, guys can take their smartphones and, you know, go sit in their individual room and you lose that cohesion. So I think by the fire service as a whole, but we need to really be more deliberate and foster that group interaction again. And I think that's where we're going to find a lot of the reversal of some of the group and leadership problems that we have.
Amen to that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You talked about the issues that we've seen come up. That is one of the issues that comes up regularly, is the issue of technology and the role of phones and social media and a broader range of technology, but in particular the phones. And I think as a society, this is no mystery, but we have not figured out what the role of these computers that we carry around is going to be. I mean, the current generation, I saw a picture recently in a presentation actually on anxiety and PTSD that was a baby looking at the screen of an iPhone. And the mom was using it to distract the kid. And so our brains are getting wired to deal with this technology. And you get a ding on your phone and there's a dopamine hit.
Well, I was going to say it's worse. I think it's a chemical addiction to technology.
Right. Yeah. And yet it's a powerful tool that's very useful. So I don't think we've figured it out yet, but it does have a social implication in the firehouse. And we hear that regularly. And so we're working to figure out ways that we can get folks to turn them off briefly and say, okay, we're going to watch this TED talk together, start with why, Simon Sinek, and talk about our core values in the firehouse.
Absolutely. It was on social media, actually, ironically, but there's a picture of a bus stop. I think it was, it might be in England, actually. And there's literally about 12 people at this bus stop. 11 of them are looking at their phones, and one guy is just staring out into space. And the caption says, "Look at this psycho just standing there thinking about stuff."
Beautiful. Well, it was interesting. I was in Cabo for vacation last year, and what struck me was all of the families. You would watch families go from the beach to the pool to the dining room or wherever they were going, and you'd have maybe the dad leading the party, and he'd be the guy that would be the designated person watching the sidewalk, and everybody following along behind, staring at their screens, not seeing anything around them, not experiencing any of the spectacular scenery.
No, I know. It's criminal. And it's funny. It always reminds me of when I interviewed Tim Kennedy a while ago and his group Sheepdog Response, and their whole thing is, situational awareness, ultimately. It's not a shooting course. It's not a fighting course. It's try not to get killed. And then you see people engrossed in their phones. And I, of course, have been guilty of this myself. And you're like, oh my God, someone sat next to me in a restaurant. I didn't even see him sit down. What if it had been, someone with ill intentions? I would be dead now just because I'm engrossed in some Facebook post.
Absolutely.
And yet, they're powerful tools. Rob and I have our phones sitting here on the desk in front of us. I have a friend who's an acting battalion chief in Fort Collins, Colorado. And I looked in one of the fire trucks and asked what that computer's used for. And he said, well, it's a call out system. It's got our maps on it. But nobody really uses it anymore because at some point some young kid said, I've got a faster route on my iPhone here. And so they are useful for a whole bunch of different things. I used one last week to take photos I'm on the local search and rescue team, and we had a poor young 19-year-old male fall 70 feet down a cliff.
Oh, God.
And, but I took some pictures as timestamps for the AAR. And so, these things are powerful tools, and we just need to learn how to best use them.
Yeah, I might couldn't agree more. We use them a lot on scene. Actually, I used them just to navigate to a call the other day where the MDT that we had stopped kind of at the front gate, and we had no idea where to go after that. So, and then another one I love to use is when we have kids that are hurt. It's a great distraction tool to put a cartoon on YouTube on the way to the hospital, and they watch that and forget about whatever it was that they were sick or injured from before. Okay, so I guess before we delve too deep, could you tell me what All American Leadership is about?
That's a great question, James. Thank you. So our purpose is to inspire, empower, and challenge leaders to develop and sustain elite cultures. Inspire them so that people want to, they have a desire to. Empower them with the training, the tools, the resources, and the authority to lead. And then challenge people to do amazing things. And from an ethos or core values perspective, we start with character. You know, are you self-aware? Do you have a growth mindset? Do you behave with integrity between what you say you believe in and what you actually do? Do you have the grit, the perseverance, and the humility? The humility to admit you don't know everything and the vulnerability to open yourself to new learning. Those lead to empathy, which you could lump into being a great character trait, but we think it stands alone because if we're talking about leadership and creating that emotional resonance between human beings, there's no greater accelerator than being able to demonstrate empathy. And then when you demonstrate empathy, it goes to our next core value, which is trust. If I get to that spot where I'm asking, you've demonstrated whatever character you're going to demonstrate, the empathy you're going to demonstrate, I'm going to make a decision. Do I trust that you care about me, or do I not trust that you care about me? Because that becomes then the fork in the road that determines whether I'm going to be committed or whether I'm going to be simply compliant. And that leads to, if I can get to a place of commitment and trust, our fourth value, which is ownership, where I'm assuming accountability. You don't have to impose it on me. I'm going to own it. And then the foundation for everything we do is to be continually learning. So that's our purpose, and that is our ethos.
All right, so I think this would be a good time to transition into what you do with the fire department. So I know you have a range of different boot camps and projects. So would you like to tell us kind of what that range is and who you direct each to?
Yes, absolutely. So if I could take a step back, the entire curriculum that we have, and whether the work that we do with the fire service, with other public entities, with corporate America, it's based on the collective genius, I'll say, of our faculty. And that's probably one of the most unique aspects to who we are, and why we're a little bit different than some of the other organizations that are out there. And if I could just take a quick moment, I'd love to brag on our team for a moment.
Please take as long as you want. There's no rush. Okay. I've seen the page is absolutely ridiculous. I have to scroll through these amazing leaders. So, yeah, take whatever time it takes to really paint the picture.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So we have been so fortunate to put together this collection of absolute been there, done that leaders. And so I've been trying to figure out what is it that makes them who they are and how that brings us and creates such a unique dynamic for our organization. And as I've been able to filter through it and try and make it simpler, what I've come up with is, as a group, they have all embraced at a young age this notion of I want to be challenged. And whether it was high school and then intercollegiate sports, whether it's going to one of the service academies, whether it was becoming a Navy SEAL, going to Ranger school, going to jump school, going to flight school, any of those things, we all have embraced challenge early in our life. Or in Rick's situation, going into expedition leadership development. Then from there, without exception, every one of them have excelled at senior levels of leadership. So they not only earned the merit badge, but they ended up excelling at senior levels. And then I think another big differentiator is that they showed a true commitment to both developing future leaders and continually improving the way that they do that. You know, I know some folks, you know, and I hate to say this coming from West Point, but there are some folks out there that think that if it didn't originate at West Point, which is kind of the birthplace of leadership development in this country, that it must not be valid, or that if it's been good enough for the last 200 years, it should be good enough for the next 100 years. And what we're finding is, in that world that's going so fast and accelerating and where it's becoming so complex and filled with distractions, the ways that we've led in the past may not still be serving us well, and we have to continually be looking for new ways to stay relevant. And they do that. And then the thing that I love most is when participants or clients come back to us and they characterize our team, and what they always come back and say is, wow, I'm blown away by the passion, the focused commitment, and the humility. And what we find is our people just can't help but become emotionally bonded with our team. And then when you look at what these guys have accomplished, whether they're decorated combat commanders doing extraordinary things, or whether you've got the former deputy commandant of West Point or the commandant of the Citadel, the executive director for leadership and character development at the Air Force Academy, as I mentioned earlier, Kevin Basic, the Air Force representative to the Secretary of Defense for ethical and professional behavior, and the list goes on and on. You got Rick, who, you know, he teases himself or he chastises himself for not having a military background, but yet he's the guy that our team of esteemed leaders turn to in many cases for guidance and the voice of reason, who's overseen expeditions for NASA astronauts to bond and connect with the ground support crews, naval midshipmen, you know, expeditions, things like that. These are just extraordinary men doing and women having done extraordinary things. And So picking their brains and collaborating and constantly saying, how can we do this better? How can we make it simpler? How can we make it more effective for the users, for those people that are trying to develop their leadership skills or their team abilities? We've come up with kind of an approach that we call our nesting doll approach, where depending on how long you're going to be exposed to us, you're going to get the same concepts. You're just going to, the more time you spend with us, you're going to be able to take a deeper dive. And so when we talk about things like purpose and ethos and values, it's going to be deeper and deeper explorations into those areas. If it's talking about grit and resilience, or Angela Duckworth's work, if we're talking about flow and Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, and how do you get into that state of flow? How do you recognize as a leader that your team is in an agitated state and you may be exceeding that optimal flow range, and we need to figure out how we can reduce the level of challenge, increase the adaptability, or that we have folks that are not being challenged, and those are the guys that like to sit around the water cooler and complain about everything because they're not being adequately challenged. They're not feeling like they're fulfilling their purpose. We put all those things into our curriculum. And probably the starting point within the fire service is, we can talk a good game, but like anything else, until you see it in action, we could just be the flavor of the month. We could just be blowing a lot of smoke. So we like to go out and work with an organization. We started with the LA Area Fire Chiefs Association and said, let us interact with you chiefs for a couple of hours and understand the challenges you're trying to overcome or trying to address, and share with you a little bit of our philosophy. Let them experience us. And we largely do that on our own dime, just so that they can get a sense for whether or not we might be a fit for what they're trying to do. And frankly, so that we can get a sense for whether or not they're open to learning. And from there, we've then gone to the formal boot camp, just a day-long experience. It's a low commitment entry point for them to send a scout out and say, all right, I'm going to send one or two or three people to experience this day-long program and get a deeper sense for whether or not this is a fit for us. And we just did one yesterday up in Beverly Hills, at Beverly Hills Fire Department, their training facility, and it was sold out. And the comments that came back from the participants were absolutely wonderful. We had seven departments represented, over 30 people that registered. And from there, what I think the common theme that came out of that discussion yesterday was a unanimous belief that all of their departments needed to get back to an understanding and communication of their mission statement, and making sure that everybody in their department understood, embraced, and lived their values. From there, we're hoping that we'll fill the 2017 Fire Leadership Academy. And this is now a deeper dive, because now this is a 6-month program where they're going to get together once a month for 6 months, going through that framework that Rick mentioned, leading self, leading in relationships, in teams, and in organizations. And it's pretty intense, in that there's a lot of reading, there's a lot of video watching that takes place between the visits, they come away better leaders and better able to go in and influence their departments. Some of the books, we typically have 6 books that they're going to read through the course of the program. And we have this we do learning as one of our core values. And so we're constantly, as an organization, doing group reads. And after we do a group read, we discuss it, identify whether or not there's some nuggets that we can incorporate into our curriculum. And if it's really an outstanding book, we might incorporate it and make it one of the 6. We don't want to make it more than 6. So if we find that somebody really has written something that's going to be impactful, then somebody else has to get voted off the island. But right now, the books that we're assigning as part of the curriculum are first Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck out of Stanford, helping people develop and understand the importance and the potential of having a growth mindset. From there, we look at Marshall Goldsmith's work in his book Triggers. Again, going to what Rick said, helping people to be self-aware and understand what their triggers are and what they're feeling at any given moment. Then we look at Angela Duckworth's Grit and how do you develop that focused passion and perseverance around an objective over time. Legacy, probably one of the more popular books that we use by James Kerr, which is a kind of a biopsy on the leadership lessons of the New Zealand All Blacks, which has been pretty roundly accepted as the most successful professional sports franchise across all disciplines over the last 100 years. And that's a fascinating read. We've already mentioned General McChrystal's Team of Teams. We also include David Marquet's Turn the Ship Around, where he took the worst submarine in the Navy and turned it into the best, highest performing ship of any kind in the Navy, using largely the same crew. And the most recent addition to the reading list is a book by Bob Chapman, who's the CEO of a company called Barry Waymiller, called Everybody Matters. If you're an aficionado of Simon Sinek and the work that he's done, he talks about Barry Waymiller and Bob Chapman pretty regularly. And what's unique there is this is an organization, this is a company that has made their purpose growing and developing people. They use business as the platform to grow and develop people rather than using people to grow a company, which is kind of a fascinating concept. But that's kind of those are kind of the themes that we use. And then we have a couple of one-offs where we'll have departments that'll come to us and say, would you come in and help us with that purpose and core values thing? And what we like to emphasize is we're not about coming in and throwing out whatever hard work you've already done around your purpose and values. What we find generally is that purposes and values are almost always goodness. Where we sometimes get off the track is a lot of times those purpose statements, those mission statements, and the value statements are too wordy, where nobody can remember them. And if nobody can remember them, nobody can live them. So maybe we need to simplify them. Maybe we need to just tweak a couple of the values because they're no longer relevant in the modern world or the world that we're trying to operate in. Very seldom do we just say we're going to just start with a blank sheet of paper. Usually it's some kind of a modification or just a reinvigoration, a reaffirmation of what we've done. And there's some really interesting things that come from those purpose sessions. In many cases, it's the first time that an entire department or 90% of the department have come together in one room to really talk about who are we, what do we stand for, what are we committed to as a group, you know, as a tribe. And the takeaways, besides coming away usually feeling very, very emotionally tired because it's hard work, particularly when you may have 10 values that we really, really like, but we're committed to getting it down to 5, the core 5 that really matter, because we want everybody to be able to remember them easily. Or the hard work of narrowing it down to a single word as opposed to like a very long sentence. Sometimes you find that folks, they want the purpose and the values to be kind of a marketing slogan for the outside world as opposed to something that really is for us, and that as outsiders look at it, they can become inspired. Or where they think that the purpose and the values will do the heavy lifting. If we come up with the most inspiring $2 words, those will lift off the page, they'll leap into everybody's heart, and they'll make people do the right things, as opposed to having the people do the heavy lifting and just making their activities and their behaviors centered around those words. I'd rather have a 25-cent word that everybody's committed to than a $2 word that's really, really fancy, that nobody understands what it really means. So those are the kinds of things that that we're doing for and with the fire service right now. And that'll probably change over time as we understand the different and shifting needs within the fire service. We're not a kind of take it off the shelf and what you can have whatever color you like as long as it's black.
Well, I'm sorry. Go on, Rick.
Yeah, I'd just add that the Fire Leadership Academy is our flagship product for the fire service. Of course, we work with other industries. And what was really gratifying in the first class was that we were able to – we spent a good time listening and learning, and folks were able to develop as leaders and experiment during the 6 months to try and change things. And so it was really neat to have folks figure out how they could move as leaders and become better leaders in the department. And it's not about promotions. It's about everybody can lead from everywhere. Kind of a provocative question that came up. We went through core values in this Fire Leadership Academy, and one of those folks was enamored with this, talked to his chief, and we ended up doing a purpose workshop a day, coming up with core values and a purpose statement for the department. And this particular person was a battalion chief. And with his core values, he ended up doing this process of asking people how they could be more fulfilled and engaged at work. And someone came to work, happened to be a millennial, and said, "I want to bring my dog." And so the provocative question is, why can't I bring my dog to the firehouse? And this battalion chief, his emotional reaction was, "That's ridiculous." But then he thought about it, and he thought, well, it actually serves some of our core values about teamwork and caring and serving each other and being supportive. And what's it going to hurt? And then he listed the things it could hurt. And essentially what he told this fellow was, let's do a 2-week experiment. And that dog has to be in a kennel within 30 seconds of when the tone goes off every time. And we need to make sure that that is not slowing us one iota. And beyond that, I'm nervous, but let's give it a try. And so it was this innovative thing. And I don't know if that's the right answer, but we need to get back to him and see how that worked.
Yeah.
I think it is exactly the right answer, because you know, I'm sure the first thing in his mind is, well, that's not what we normally do. And that's exactly what you're challenging with you know, the philosophy that you're fostering. Again, the irony is we used to have dogs in fire stations a long time ago.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing about the Fire Leadership Academy is you have the opportunity to watch real time the individual growth that takes place, and some of it's very, very deliberate in how we structure the program. And as Rick mentioned, we start with a very Socratic approach, and then we build on that. So we start by asking good, deep questions that provoke thought and provoke discussion. But then as we migrate through the 6 months, and as we've introduced the core concepts, whether it be growth mindset, whether it be talking about your purpose and your values, whether it be talking about flow state and how do you create team flow or grit or any of the other pieces, deliberate practice, we step back and we say, okay, Tom, you lead the discussion today. And I don't want you just to regurgitate what you think flow is or what a growth mindset is. I want you to facilitate a discussion amongst your peers where you're asking them questions and you're promoting those Socratic discussions. And it's amazing to watch folks that really are not comfortable speaking in front of a group by the end of the 6 months are very comfortable in that dynamic and asking questions of their peers and promoting those discussions to the point where Rick and I have often sat in the back of the room thinking, wow, are we really doing anything to earn our pay today? Because they're leading these. In fact, somebody's described it as this is very much like a graduate seminar, where they're doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, it's interesting you touched on that. I was talking to my partner on a rescue yesterday about she went to a fire conference and we're talking about bringing what she learned to the rest of the guys that didn't go. And she said, "Well, I don't like talking in front of crowds," and I think that, you know, what you're doing should be done in every firehouse around the country. and forcing every single member of the department to get out there and do, whether it's just a real simple teaching class for 10 minutes or whatever. But the more you do that, the more you're going to reach out to your peers with your unique knowledge. And then you're just going to elevate the entire department if everyone is out there doing their part and leading in their own in a way that they're comfortable with, even whether they're a chief or a lieutenant or just someone that's really good at tree trimming or whatever your skill is.
Absolutely. And you never know in today's world, you never know when you're going to have a microphone shoved in your face and somebody's going to be asking you questions out on a call.
Or on a podcast.
Yes.
All right. Well, you mentioned about Beverly Hills. I found the name of the gentleman that I listened to a presentation at TSAC. Jacob Morrow was his name, and he's a Beverly Hills firefighter. I'm not sure if he was at your seminar that you did, but you mentioned that you'd had a lot of feedback from that. So what were some of the comments that you got?
Well, it was interesting. One department brought their entire command staff. And they said, would like to have captains go through the course. So we're likely to talk with them again, and we're excited about that. A number of people said things like, I'd recommend this class to all ranks. Start people early. So that was pretty neat. And it really speaks to the need for leadership training in the fire service, and that'll help with succession. If we were to look at some of the specific feedback about things people learned, they talked about core values. They talked about emotional intelligence. One guy said, you can learn about leadership just if you're willing to look in the mirror. but a good summary that one person said was, for situational awareness, we talk about looking up, down, and around. And I've shifted that, and he wrote that here, look up, down, around, and within. And I think that's important. And also social awareness of what's going on in your team. Also mentioned talk about ownership and doing a little bit more than our share. At Knowles, we talk about something called expedition behavior. And it's interesting. That phrase has gone to NASA, and they talk about expedition behavior. And I was having a discussion with a group of astronauts one time. We were talking about, what is good expedition behavior? And one astronaut summarized it as doing 51% of my share, or 51% of the workload, more than my share. If everyone does that, then it's going to work out well. But what was interesting in this discussion was some astronaut candidates who were early in their training started talking about things they could do in space. And they'd never been in space. Well, this astronaut said, I've been an astronaut for 13 years. I've been in space 26 days. You're all smart people. You can do the math. Our jobs are on the ground. So when we talk about expedition behavior, I want to talk about how we treat the receptionist. I want to talk about how we treat the janitor. I want to talk about how we treat each other in the office. And that really goes to the firehouse issues of how do we treat each other. So in any case, the fact that they were talking about doing a little bit more than their share at the end of the day yesterday was gratifying. And finally, this was a really nice comment. It said, impressed that you both listened, truly listening and recalling what we said an hour ago and thanking us for our contributions. And that just goes back to our method where we're really there to engage with the emergent issues that are coming up during the facilitation, during the day, to help move things forward.
I think one of the other things that comes up regularly, and that is, you know, we're not the only show in town, and there are other opportunities and other avenues that can be pursued for leadership development within the fire service. And we are not either so naive or arrogant to think that we are the only people that can crack the code on this. But one thing, and I know I mentioned this earlier, and that is that we are constantly looking to see how can we make the platform more effective, and how can we make it more simple and easy to understand? And one of the things that frustrates me about this space, this leadership development space, and what we've learned is that, gosh, it's like they're like 7-Elevens. There seems to be another leadership development firm popping up on every street corner. But how so many of them are focused on dumping content. And I'm going to measure my worth by how many inches worth of, you know, curriculum I can provide. And we don't want to add to that clutter. We don't want to add to that burden. We want to give you some basic concepts that you can master to be agile and adaptive in today's environment.
Yeah, I fear that in this podcast, if we went back and listed every concept and book we've mentioned, that's almost all we teach over 6 months.
Over and over.
Over and over, so that people actually internalize it and they go home and they, you know, we're one of the things I love about this organization is everyone in it is a learner and an educator. And educators, I call it the educator's reward when the light bulb goes off over someone's head. Or you get a letter a year later saying, hey, I changed my life in this way. But one of the gratifying things is folks talking about how their relationships at home improved, how they shifted their daughter's thinking about math skills in terms of a growth mindset, or how their communication with their spouse has improved. And that goes back to stress management and all the other issues that you talk about so well with your guests.
Yeah, it's fantastic that you guys are saying exactly what you're saying at the moment, because that's been the through line, the common denominator through so many of my guests. And we're talking about different areas, but it's just that you said this saturation of content, and I'll use the fitness industry as a perfect example. You know, whether you're lying on a Swiss ball, shaking your shake weight while drinking your Slim Fast, you know, where the answer is just move and eat well, you know, it's
exactly.
Simple.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. So I want to touch on a couple of things from the feedback as well, if you don't mind. So we talked about your initial approach to the fire department. We've had a great explanation of the different levels that you guys offer. And I do want to still talk about the All-American Leadership Expedition in a moment, but what are some of the challenges that these fire departments have said were barriers to leadership within their chosen departments?
That's a great question, and we mentioned the challenges they're facing of succession, generational issues, the blue shirt, black shirt divide, technology, but the barriers to leadership, really, the folks we've interacted with just seem thirsty for this. And I think they just need the opportunity to be exposed to some of these issues. I mean, we yesterday had everyone from a fire chief and assistant chief and, you know, the whole command staff from one department. But then we had a nice young woman who had just taken the captain's test. And we had a number of engineers and even a firefighter, paramedic in the room. Who haven't done any designated leadership yet. And those folks were just like, these are amazing concepts. I can't, and they've never been exposed to them. So I don't know that there's a huge barrier to it. I mean, I suppose the fire chiefs and so on need to become aware how useful this can be. And the older generation came up in a command and control environment, and they think that's what they should continue to do until retirement. But if you sit down and have dinner with them, most of them will realize this is about my legacy. I want to leave with a group of battalion chiefs and captains who are ready to lead, and somebody's going to step into my shoes, and it's a different world now. So there are going to be different challenges. So I think they just need to become aware of the opportunity.
Right. Yeah, I know I don't know if I'm paraphrasing it, but one of the quotes I love about leadership is a good leader develops other leaders. And I think that you know, rings very, very true. If you're there trying to keep your subordinates beneath you and make yourself look good, then I don't think that's leadership.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I had an old Marine colonel that said, you got two jobs as a leader. One is to bring people together, and the other one is to create new leaders. Absolutely.
And Lao Tzu in the Tao Te Ching said, a good leader at the end, the team will say, this we did ourselves.
Yes, I remember that quote. So, yeah, I love that quote as well. All right, so the one other thing I'm going to touch on, I don't even know if this is directly something that you would even mitigate, but I know that there are going to be many, many people out there totally owning the fact they're going to bring this leadership back to their department, but bridging the gap between the fire department and then the city, county, whatever entity that you work for, and creating better relationships between those two.
Yeah, so there's a couple of aspects to that, and we look at them. It's a trust thing. It always goes back to trust, and I think another big aspect of that is empathy, and that's taking the time to not just say they're the bad guys or they're the enemy, but to actually empathize. So what are the challenges they're trying to deal with, and if I can understand. If I can give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they're not just evildoers with malintent, but they actually are rational human beings that want to do good things, then I can look at them a little bit differently. So what are the challenges that they're facing? What are the things that they're trying to overcome or accomplish? And then from my side, when I look at my purpose and I look at my values, How can I make sure that our purpose encompasses them? Simon Sinek he calls it that circle of safety, where does my purpose speak to all of my different stakeholders, whether it be the community, other agencies, the city council, city manager, other departments, and does my purpose serve them as well as it serves me? And then how am I communicating my purpose so that those other stakeholders understand that they are important in our lives so that we can try and pull them into that circle of trust or circle of safety with us rather than feel like a we, they, us, them type of conflict or tension.
I had a mentor when I was assistant director of Knowles, Alaska, Don Ford. I'm going to name him because he still serves as a mentor to me. He was my supervisor, who said you should always think about the stresses that your supervisor's supervisor is under. And so if you're a captain, you ought to be thinking about what stresses the fire chief is thinking about. If you're an assistant fire chief, you ought to be thinking about what the city manager or the mayor is stressed about. And if you're a fire chief, you need to think about what the individual city council members are worried about in terms of getting reelected. And to have a firefighter or a union rep be able to empathize all the way up and down the chain, and I do say down as well, because the fire chief's got to get out there and do some dirty work and spend some time with folks on the floor. If you can increase that empathy, then you have people who, the union rep who's trying to get a better labor settlement, they realize they're competing with the police department and they're competing with the public works department, because that's what the city manager's working on.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you for that. All right, so I'm going to finish with a few shorter questions, because we've already taken well over an hour of your guys' time, and I really, really appreciate the incredible information that you got here. I'm going to have probably carpal tunnel syndrome by the time I'm writing up all the show notes for this one. I won't even ask you your favorite book, because you've already given me six. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about the All-American Leadership Expedition.
You bet. This is actually, in a way, how Rob and I met, because Bob Schultz, who's the retired Navy SEAL captain, used to be head of character development at the U.S. Naval Academy. He put out a request for proposal at the Naval Academy to do a character internship for the midshipmen. And Knowles won that bid. And for 13 years now, we've been running expeditions for the Navy. And about 20-22% of Naval Academy midshipmen come on 3.5-week-long expeditions. Bob was so enamored by this that when he retired, he became a Knowles instructor. And then he and I started working courses together, and he conceived this idea of an executive leadership expedition. And Rob came out on one of those a few years ago, and we all, the three of us, were out there together, and we got to know each other really well. And Rob said, I think we ought to do this through All American Leadership. And so we are now we, AAL, are now sponsoring a course through Knowles. And it's a fascinating mix because we have All-American Leadership team members out with client representatives and potential clients. And so, boy, do you get to know a CEO or a battalion chief, or this year we've got a couple of senior enlisted folks from Naval Special Warfare coming. It's a great mix of folks. It's llama supported, so your backpacks are only 20 to 25 pounds. Knowles is not known for having light backpacks, although we've improved on that over the last decade. But bringing llamas makes your pack really light.
But also adds to the leadership challenge.
Yeah, because, for instance, Rob and I might share a llama, and we'll throw our tent, our cook gear, our food, and maybe our sleeping bags on the llama. But we have to figure out exactly who's doing which part of the packing and that sort of thing. And every llama has its own personality as well. And we could tell you funny stories about that. So we go out for a week. We start and end in Lander, Wyoming, and we go up into the Wind River Range. We get up over 11,000 feet, and we usually have a mix of weather, a mix of terrain. We usually start more on trail, but we finish off trail. And we use, at Knowles, we use a designated leader of the day model. So you get a CEO and one of our team members leading two different hiking groups. And there's an instructor from Knowles there to back them up, which I end up playing both roles, which is really fun. But they have to plan the day, lead the day, and run an after-action review at the end of the day. And it's really fun to watch these folks who are very accomplished in other realms of life, but maybe have never carried a backpack or never read a topographic map, and yet they have often type A habits and an approach to this thing that they don't have high competence in. And we learn a lot from each other that way. The other aspect that's awesome about this expedition is that we set aside time to do 15-minute long leadership journeys. And so it's your 12-minute story about, it's not a CV or a resume. It's what are the key elements in my life that formed who I am as a leader. And that's, for me, that's Mrs. Ely in sixth grade, who talked about scholar athlete. It's some hard courses I've had over the years, whatever it is. And then you finish with what your current learning edge is. And that can be a wide range of things. It can be an admiral who's retiring and saying, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. Or I remember a 70-year-old fellow who'd been in the military for a little bit, and then he'd been in the industry for a long time, in the financial industry. And he said, now I'm working with Rotarians at the Rotary Club, and they're all volunteers, and I don't know how to motivate them. I can't pay them more. I can't fire them. And so here you got a 70-year-old who's still learning about leadership. So you have these amazing discussions about leadership. And also people, you know, the CEO, I can remember there wasn't a dry eye in the house, I say. There wasn't a dry eye on the mountain. The night that the CEO talked about his drug addiction in his 20s and how he got over that. And so there's something about being in the wilderness together and completely relying upon each other for everything that opens folks up, and you hear amazing stories.
And then also being able to, in that microcosm of a week, be able to come together with 10 total strangers in many cases, and very quickly understand that you're going into an ambiguous environment, particularly when you're off trail, where there are numerous challenges that have to be addressed, and there's no set hierarchy, and where you learn to collaborate, cooperate, assume that expedition behavior of I'm going to take responsibility for a little bit more than my share of every task, mission, relationship, and where suddenly you form those trust bonds, and that becomes the grease that accelerates the productivity and the performance of that team over the course of a week. And then the big bonus at the end, the icing on the cake at the end, is that you take these 10 strangers and they are now lifelong friends. And it's a fascinating journey and transformation that you see take place with people, and the light bulbs that come on throughout the week are just really, really gratifying.
We've had dinner parties where people get together afterwards quite often, but just a couple of weeks ago, five people from different expeditions who got to know each other through this network went over and climbed Kilimanjaro together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I just want to say that any project that is Llama supported sounds interesting to me. Sounds like an endorsement. So I think that would be an incredible thing for a crew, you know, a firehouse crew, or, you know, like you said, all the lieutenants from a shift, or I could see multiple applications for that, you know, team building exercise to really kind of rein in a department that maybe needs that edge. I have a couple of quick questions then. So for you both, obviously you're very, very well traveled. Do either of you have favorite countries in the world or destinations?
I'll make it simple. For me, it's going to be that next country that I haven't been to yet.
Yeah. My answer is a little bit more complicated. When I started at Knowles, I was very interested in going to different places. I wanted to go to different countries, to different, you know, go to Alaska, go, you know, I've worked all over the West, Patagonia and India and the Himalayas and so on. That was very interesting to me. And then I also wanted to work a whole bunch of different activities, because I started out as better at coaching athletics than I was teaching the intellectual side of things. But then it evolved into caring more about the audience as I matured. And I worked a bunch with training instructors, but nowadays it's working with different client organizations and coming to meet people where they are and trying to figure out what they need. And so I'm just fascinated by cultures, whether it's a culture in another country or a culture in an organization, and the role of leadership. And again, you don't have to be the designated leader. You can be someone who's learning about leadership, who's a brand new engineer. And the role of leadership in developing, creating and sustaining elite cultures.
Okay. So. Fantastic. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right. So the other question, you've mentioned the six or seven titles that you gave us from the books. What about films, either movies or documentaries?
We're huge YouTube fans.
Yeah, we're always looking for the next TED Talk or something by a Brené Brown or a Stephen Kotler or somebody along those lines.
Okay,
and I think that's because we can build them in. We can build them into our curriculum.
We're insatiable learners.
Yeah, it's incredible to me how you've delved down the TED Talks and some of these other arenas. And you just take a step back and why the hell was I listening to the radio or, you know, whatever other mindless distraction when these great people are out here giving these incredible speeches and I've been missing it for years.
You know, it's not a movie, but there's a book that just came out that I've been really intrigued by recently. And I'm anxious to talk about it with our team is Sam Walker's The Captain Class. Where he was the editor, the sports editor at the Wall Street Journal for a number of years, and wanted to write an article. He wanted to first identify, come up with an objective criteria for what were the most successful elite sports teams of history across all sports, and he evaluated over 1,000, 1,200 teams in different sports over a course of a century, and narrowed it down to about 200. High-performing teams, but then ultimately narrowed it down to the 16 most prolific teams of all time. And what he wanted to do is write a series of articles about what were the secrets of these elite teams. And what he ended up finding was that they all had different things going for them but that the one common denominator for all of these 16 teams was the team captain. And that their rise of their reign usually started and coincided with the signing of that captain, and it usually was the end of that reign when that captain left. And so he ended up putting together those seven characteristics that he felt were the things that you were that elite captains uniquely did. And the thing that I found most interesting was that they're not all the usual suspects. There are a couple of things in there that would surprise you that the most elite captains do to bring their people together and get the most out of them.
Okay, well, I'll put that in the show notes too then, the captain class. That'd be something I'll probably have to purchase myself very soon from Amazon. Okay, so the very last question then, where can people find both you guys and all the projects that you have?
Well, you can come to our website at www.allamericanleaders.com. And also Rick and I are both on LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect.
And Knowles is at www.knowles.edu, but you can find the AALE, the All-American Leadership Expedition, on the All-American Leadership website. That would probably be an easier...
Under events.
Okay, yeah. Fantastic. All right, well, I want to say thank you so much. I'm so glad that Mike, you know, approached Pat, and then we all got to get together today. This is, as I said to you before, an area that I haven't addressed on this show yet, really. We've had leadership elements to some of the other discussions, but I think this is an area that I know in my department right now, we have some glaring things that we need to fix. I would love to try and get the wheels turning of getting you guys actually to my department. But I'm banging on their doors a lot as it is. My knuckles are bloody from annoying my chiefs.
As long as it's your knuckles and not your forehead.
Yeah, no, that's...
James, you're doing such great work. It's been fun to follow your podcast. And one of my personal goals is to help people develop physically, emotionally, and intellectually. And they're not separate things. They're just categories of human experience. And so when you talk to folks about stress or physical conditioning, that's part of leadership. And it's the same ball of wax.
Yeah, fantastic. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, I really, really appreciate the time that you guys have taken, the fact that you both coordinated to stand in front of the same microphone and do this as a collaboration, which I think is a fun dynamic as well. But I know that the people listening, this is definitely going to be coming from a different angle, and I'm pretty sure every single person around the planet, and I can say that because I know that we have many, many countries listening now are going to take something away from this. So thank you so much again for your time.
Absolutely, James. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.